Again, it seems like I should turn the podium a little bit this way because this side's not nearly as many people. So I don't know why that is. Must be the preferred side. Well, it's good to see you all. Greetings from my wife. She's not feeling well today, so she wanted to make sure to say hello to everyone. And I wanted to thank you all for your prayers for my knee. It's getting better every week, or every day, I should say. So I thank you very much for that. For the start of the sermon today, I'd like to read to you a couple of short letters that were written by my niece and nephew here about, I'm going to say, about 4 years ago. And they were made to write each other letters from their mother after they had got caught fighting. The first one is from my nephew Sam. He says, "Sarah, I'm sorry I did that. I wanted to help you. You are special because you're my sister. I love you. You helped me, and I love you. I will love you more than I do my friends. Love, Sam." Well, Sarah got the note, and she had to write back to Sam. She said, "Dear Sam, I'm sorry I hit you. I hit you because you were messing with my game, even though I told you," and she bolded this, "5 times, and you did it anyway. That was really annoying. Now I know that was wrong because I should not try to hurt you. Another reason it was wrong is because it's not my place to discipline and correct you. That's our mom's job to do that. That was very harsh of me to hit you and to hurt you. I am sorry because of your older sister. I should never purposefully inflict damage to you in any way whatsoever. Please forgive me for what wrong I have done. I love you, Sam. I respect you, Sam. I'm sorry, Sarah." My topic that I chose today is one that it's been on my mind a lot for the last several months, maybe longer than that. And I gave a message a few years ago similar to this in La Crosse, and as the same topic was really on my mind. And what I was told afterwards was that a lot of people squirmed in their seats a little bit, and it's not my intention to cause that. But I hope that you can see my point today and see that this is something that's very important to me, something that I've really been working on, something I want to share with all of you, because I think it's something that's very important for every single one of us. Turn over to 1 Peter 2, if you would, please, for us to start. As we set the stage here this afternoon, as we look at all the things that God expects of us, you and I as Christians, as we prepare to be part of his kingdom of priests, I think sometimes we take for granted some of the things that God tells us that we should be doing, and maybe we don't think about them as enough. And this is one of those areas that I know for myself I need to continue to think about. But let's go to 1 Peter 2. We'll start in verse 11. I'm going to read this set of scriptures out of the Net Bible version in this case. 1 Peter 2, starting in verse 11, it says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to keep away from fleshly desires that do battle against the soul, and maintain good conduct among the non-Christians, so that though they now malign you as wrongdoers, they may see your good deeds and glorify God when he appears. Be subject to every human institution for the Lord's sake, whether to a king supreme or to governors, as those he commissions to punish wrongdoers and praise those who do good." Verse 15, "For God wants you to silence the ignorance of foolish people by doing good. Live as free people, not using your freedom as a pretext for evil, but as God's slaves." And verse 17 is what I want to focus on. "Honor," or in some translations it says, "respect. Honor all people." Respect all people. "Love the family of God. Fear God. Honor the king." So what does it really mean to honor, or again, as other translations put, to respect others? Well, if you think you know the answer, and you might, I guess I would ask you, how good at it do you think you are as individuals? Do you, And I've asked myself this a lot lately. Do I show the proper honor and respect to others? Do I do that as I should? And as you answer that question, please look at it from God's perspective, through God's eyes, not through our own human eyes, because if you're like me, we can reason lots of things away. But I think if you really consider this, I'm pretty sure that all of us could find areas of our lives where we're not as respectful as we should be, or that we do not honor others as much as God expects us to. And I don't mean to be cruel or judgmental, because again, this is something that is a hard subject to talk about. But I just want people to really think about it, please, and look at yourself as I do. Look at your actions. Look at our pride. Look at the things that you do, the things that you say, the way that you talk to people, and apply the basic sense of the words honor and respect to that analysis. And I think what you might see is that, as I did, that there's still work to be done on all of our behalfs. You see, honor and respect has great importance in every aspect of our lives. We're taught as children, at least one hopes, to respect our parents, to respect our teachers, to respect our elders, to respect the school rules, to respect the traffic laws, to respect families, to respect traditions that aren't pagan, but to respect those things. We're taught to respect other people's feelings, to respect other people's rights. We're taught to respect our country's flag. We're taught to respect our country's leaders. We're taught to respect the truth. All of those things we're hopefully taught from a young age. But as we grow older, the question is, how well do we do those things? I was always told, don't roll your eyes. I'm surprised my eyes didn't get slapped the other side of my head sometimes, because I forgot that. Don't you roll your eyes at me. Oh yeah, that was a disrespectful thing. I was led to believe later in life. But all of us, I think, can consider those times when there's something that we need to think through and think about this topic a little more. You know, over the years, we've hopefully come to revalue and respect some of the things that I mentioned earlier. And when we're older, we may shake our heads or our fists, depending on what mood we're in that day, at people who have seemed to not learn respect for some things. We've likely developed great respect for people that we consider to be worthy of our respect, and have lost respect for those that we or I consider to be unworthy of that honor. Now, I may be, again, the only one in this room that has that struggles with this at times, and that could be the case. And you might be above this and consider all people worthy of respect. But let's look at that a little deeper. Let's see what God says. See what He really expects of us. As we dig into this deeper, there are so many things that we need to consider. For instance, do you have to like someone to respect them or show them respect? Can you respect someone that you don't even know personally? Or how do you really demonstrate respect for a stranger, or to a stranger, or to your friends, or to your family, or to fellow church members, or to the church as a whole, church leadership? How do we really demonstrate it? How do we walk the walk? What about the government, police officers, again, teachers, the little old fellow on the corner that needs help? Are we showing the appropriate honor and respect? Are we doing what God expects of us? At my work, this has been a hot topic ever since I came to the facility that I work at in Racine. And I found that I was often frustrated by the way that many of my staff members were behaving. And I dug and dug and dug and tried to get to the bottom of the issue. And what I finally found out that the root of it all was that people had a complete lack of respect for each other, both as fellow staff and, this is really didn't go over well with me, they didn't respect the people with disabilities that were serving. In an effort to remedy this, I talked a lot on the topic of respect. I gave examples of how we would interact and boiled down basically our whole employee manual to two rules. And I meet with every new staff when they come and I say, we'll go through everything. I get to know them and I say, for you to be successful at this agency, here are two things you have to do. Number one is you will show respect to the participants. And again, these are adults with disabilities. At all times, no matter what. And I've had some staff say, well, they kicked me, or they hit me, or they spit at me. They called me name. And my answer is, I don't care. You will show respect to them at all times, no matter what. And staff have done pretty good about that. The second rule is that as staff members, you will treat each other with respect at all times, no matter what. And I've had people say, I don't like him. I didn't say you had to like them. I said, while you're here in this building, you'll show that respect. And if you can't do that, then you won't work here. And unfortunately, there are several folks who didn't make that cut. But as we come almost 3 years later, what we're seeing now as we do our annual staff surveys, people are happier. They're less disgruntled with their fellow workers. You see a general uptick in morale. And part of it has to do with that. Is there still bickering? Is there still backbiting? Is there still stuff going on? I'm sure there is. But at the very least, they hide it better than they did, or they fake it better. That could be. But it's getting better. And my participants, the people that we serve every day, are the ones who are really benefiting. And those are the ones that we're working for. The other thing that we've seen as we started doing this is, again, I have about 450 adults with disabilities on a daily basis we work with that have significant disabilities, some of them very significant. And they often have a reason for acting the way they do. They have a significant impairment. And so when they have a behavior, it's not that it's expected, but there's a reason for it. Us as quote-unquote normal or whatever, how do you want to put that, we don't really have a reason for acting the way that we do at times. And I shake my head sometimes and go, oh, why did I do that? That's not the right thing. I had no reason to say that. But we need to consider that. But one of the things about that we see in this trend is we have virtually no behaviors from our people with disabilities because of how the staff are treating them. It works. You know, recently we had a fairly serious rift between some of my trainers, and it finally made it to my desk, and I had to bring the people in and try to figure out what's going on. And it came down to a real basic answer between these two, is one said, I don't like her. I don't like the way she looks. I don't like the way she talks. There's nothing about her I like. And that was what the problem was. And the other person was obviously upset because this person was not treating her correctly. And again, I didn't tell him, oh, I can't make you like anyone, but we'll show respect. And things are kind of, they took the words to heart. And again, they might be faking it better, but that's okay. As long as they're good actors, we can get by with that, at least at the work, at least as their job, far as their job is concerned. You know, but as we look around the world, we can see just a general diminishing of the whole value for respect or honors from others, for honor of others. You know, we look at it between countries, between people, between neighbors. It's really getting much worse. It's been described as an epidemic, as a matter of fact. You know, even in God's church, we struggle with this at times. Amongst us, amongst our little family. Let's look at this a little more thoroughly. First of all, let's talk about what respect is. The Webster's New World College Dictionary defines respect as this: to feel or show honor or esteem for, to hold in high regard. It's interesting to note that the word honor appears 147 times in the New King James Version of the Bible. I think that's significant. I think that means that honor and respect is something that's important to God and therefore should be important to each of us. Turn over to Leviticus 19, if you would, verse 3. Let's just look at a few places where God says this, just again, as we work our way through this whole concept of what God expects of us. Leviticus 19, verse 3, well, you'll see when you turn there, we're told here to respect our parents. It says, every one of you shall revere his mother and his father. It goes on to say, too, and keep my Sabbath. That's what, I am the Lord your God. Every one of you, Leviticus 19:3, we are to respect our parents. Verse 32 of Leviticus 19. Verse 32, it says, you shall rise before the gray-headed and honor the presence of an old man and fear the Lord God. And fear your God, I am the Lord. So not only are we taught this from a child, from a young age, but we're told, God tells us, respect your parents. Respect the elderly. Look at Isaiah 17. We could stop at many, many other verses, but we're just going to pick a few along the way. Isaiah 17, verse 7. Probably the most important being that we need to respect. Isaiah 17, verse 7. In that day, man will look to his Maker, and his eyes will have respect for the Holy One of Israel. We're to respect, obviously, we are to respect God. Romans 13, verse 7. Romans 13, verse 7. This one can be hard, I think, sometimes. After you watch our politicians or our leaders on TV, can be difficult. But therefore, it says in verse 7 of Romans 13, render therefore to all their due, taxes to whom taxes are due, customs to whom customs, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor. We're told to have respect for our government, for our political leaders. 1 Corinthians chapter 16. Verse 10 tells us that we need to respect our pastors and church authority. 1 Corinthians 16, verse 10. And if Timothy comes, see that he may be with you without fear, for he does the work of the Lord as I do also. Therefore, let no one despise him, but send him on his journey in peace, that he may come to me, for I am waiting for him with the brethren. So Timothy coming as a church representative, we're to take care of him, we're to respect him, we're to honor him. Ephesians 6, verse 5. Ephesians 6, verse 5. Where did there. Pages are sticking together. Ephesians 6, verse 5. Tells us that we should honor our employers. It says, "Bondservants, be obedient to those who are your masters according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in sincerity of heart, as to Christ." I'm not talking about, you know, if they're causing you to do something that is against God's law or something like that, obviously, but we're supposed to have a respect for those in authority. Ephesians 5, verse 33, as we look at just a couple more here. Ephesians 5, verse 33 tells us that we are to respect. Let's see, Ephesians 5, 33. Yeah, that's right. "Nevertheless, let each one of us, you in particular, so love his own wife as himself. Men, we are to love our wives and respect them. And let the wife see that she respects her husband." 1 Thessalonians 4. Verse 4. First Thessalonians 4, verse 4. I get there. It says, and again, talking about the marriage here, it says that each of you should know how to possess his own vessel in sanctification and in honor. Husbands, respect your wives. Wives, respect your husbands. And then we started in 1 Peter 2, verse 17. We can look at that one more time because it just sums it everything up. 1 Peter 2 and verse 17. "Honor all people. Love the brotherhood. Fear God. Honor the king." You see, as believers, we're called to be people of respect. If we looked no further than the Old Testament and just stopped at the Ten Commandments, we'd have to go no further to just have a sermon on respect. Just from reading them, there we can plainly see that they are all about respect. The first four deal with our relationship with God. We know that. The next six deal with our relationship with fellow man. Again, you look closely at them and you see you will see whether they're dealing with God or with people, but whichever one, they're dealing and talking about respect. You might be thinking, is it really that bad? I want to read you a commentary that was pulled off UCG.org here a while back. It's entitled, "The Disturbing Decline in Respect for Biblical Values." It says, "Have you recently experienced a driver carelessly cutting in front of you or walked past a group of youths who hurled abuse at you without provocation? What about people pushing in line or cutting ahead of you? Today, we see a serious and growing erosion of traditional biblical values, such as respect for the rights and dignity of others. For example, newspaper columnist Melanie Phillips has lamented the waning of the quality of respect in the British Isles. She recently wrote, 'You can see examples everywhere in the myriad of incivilities of everyday life, the shouting and the swearing in the streets, the lighted cigarettes dangled carelessly in the children's faces by rush hour crowds, the casual slovenliness on the tube,'" that's their subway, their underground railway, "'as passengers antisocially chomp their way through hamburgers and leave rubbish littering the carriages. You see it in schools where teachers find it increasingly impossible to impose their authority upon badly behaved pupils.'" The British Home Secretary David Blunkett said, he blames parents who fail to accept responsibility for instilling the values of respect in their families and a general breakdown of neighborhoods in the villages, towns, and cities. The commentary goes on to say, Relationships in the West are becoming increasingly fragile. Our countries are full of broken marriages, lonely people, single mothers, confused and uncared for children, accompanied by a marked decline in courtesy, civility, and just plain good manners. Even driving courtesy has suffered in recent years, and road rage is becoming all too common. One of the fundamental reasons for this general decline in traditional values is the pervasive ignorance of biblical standards. We need to emphasize a restoration of respect for the God who created human beings and for the laws he established for our good. The commentary ends by saying this. It says, "Needed is a change of heart, turning in an altogether different direction, one of love and respect for others by obedience to God's basic spiritual law, the Ten Commandments." God said to Israel in Deuteronomy 5:29, he says, "Oh, that they had such a heart in them that they would fear me and keep all my commandments always, that it may be well with them and with their sons forever." This is nothing new to any of us if you watch the news at all or watch anything on TV or read the papers or walk outside your house. We see it around us. We see it in our jobs. We see it in our commutes. We see it in the grocery stores. We see it around us. It is an epidemic. Now, you might be way ahead of me, and one person asked me one time when I was talking about this, what can I do about it if it's such an epidemic? If it's a national trend, there's not much I can do about that. My answer to that person and to you guys is that we must use the same premise that Christ used. And we can call it whatever, but we can call it, in this case, the trickle-up upwards principle. You've heard of Reaganomics, a trickle-downwards principle, where if, in Reaganomics, the way it was is that they give the money to the tax breaks to the rich people, they create more jobs, which employs more people, and so they go buy more stuff, and then they have to make more, so the cycle works. In this case, we're starting backward. We're starting with the little person. You see, that's where we start this. We start this by our example and the way that we live our lives. And we can affect one person at a time, hopefully in a positive way. And maybe, with God's help, we can start that trend. I read a recent example of this principle of trickle-up, and it came out of a speech given to a group of inner-city leaders that were completely and finally fed up with the community that they lived in. The main speaker mentioned that if they could just get one father to be faithful to his wife and children, just one, that it would start to affect others around them. It would begin to affect other families in the community. And as other families became faithful and began to stand straight, it would affect others, and eventually it would affect the community and maybe the surrounding communities. Now, Satan, on the other hand, doesn't want to see that happen. He's not going to let it happen just that easily. He doesn't want us to succeed in something like that. He's working overtime to destroy humanity because he knows what God has in store for us if we follow God's way. But you can bet one thing, that the severe decline in general respect for others, you can bet that Satan is behind that. I'm a pretty concrete fella, so I want to start looking at some specific areas and specific responsibilities that you and I have in our lives that we can apply some of these concepts that we've talked about too. My first one is painfully obvious. We need to speak it and show it. We need to speak it and show it. You know, talk the talk and walk the walk. As humans with, unfortunately, still heavy doses at times of human nature, we can fall short. I can, as you can, tell you exactly how we are to treat others at all times, no matter what. How we should never gossip, how we should always set the right example. I can tell you that. I can tell you what God expects of me. And I'm sure you can as well. Unfortunately, I don't always live by those standards. What about you? We know what we are to do. We know that we are that how we're to act. Ask yourself this: if I'm not respecting Joe or Bob or Fred or whoever, any other person, if I'm not respecting another person for whatever reason, doesn't that mean that I've taken it upon myself to assume that they're wrong? To me, I had to answer yes, maybe not you. In my mind, I've judged that person, which is what I really see. It's where I really see it is. Where does it say in your Bible that it's okay for me to do that? It really doesn't. It tells me in my Bible not to be a part of the world. It tells me not to be a respecter of persons, meaning, you know, glad-handing or showing favoritism to certain people because you might get something for it or because they have some position of authority. I'm not talking about being a respecter of persons. I'm taught in the Bible to have no dealings with sinners, but also remember to hate the sin, not the sinner. So when I say we should speak it, I mean that we are to teach it. We're to teach it to our children. We're to teach it to those around us just by our example. We have the opportunity to affect people, especially young people. We are to live our life in such a way so that they know how to act in situations. They know how to act when someone may not treat them in a way that they feel is right. You know, if we tell our children, you should never talk about others behind their back, and then on the way home from church we do it, what message do they get? You know, it kind of defeats the whole object. You see, it's much harder. The much harder part of the concept is, besides speaking it, is showing it. To live by what we say. And we know we're to live by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. How are you doing in that area? Still a few months from Passover. But I wanted to start today by letting us really start looking inwards and looking at ourselves. As we talk about just this topic of respect, when was the last time you, or me, or I, made a disparaging comment to or about someone else? To your spouse, to your friend, etc. When was the last time? Unfortunately for me, it probably hasn't been long enough. And I asked myself, was that my way of showing respect? Did I walk the walk? What about you? Turn over to Galatians 6. Because as humans, again, with this healthy dose of human nature, we can reason a lot of things away. And we can say, you know, God understands why I'm this way. God understands why I said that to that guy. Galatians 6, verse 7 kind of stops you in your tracks, if that's what you're thinking. Because it says very clearly, be not deceived. God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man sows, that he shall also reap. So who do we think we might be fooling? Have you heard the phrase, witness is stronger than words? I always heard it as actions speak louder than words. I'm sure you've heard that. What about, came across this one, witness is longer than words. Witness is longer than words. Just ask your family. It's likely that your son, your daughter, your spouse, whatever, will be able to tell you things about your behavior that they've witnessed in you that you may have long forgotten. Some good, some better off, left in the past. But they'll remember things. They remember our actions, not necessarily the words coming out of our mouth. When you do this, what you're going to find, though, is that a lot of what they're going to remember is going to be focused on how you treated others. It's going to be focused on the example that you set. It reminds me of the story I read here a while back where the woman and her daughter were at church, and as the pastor's sermon kind of stretched on and on, maybe like this one, on and on, the daughter grew impatient, and she started to talk and getting restless. And the mom said, "Shh, I want to hear the sermon." Later, a couple of days later, they saw the pastor while they were out shopping, and they exchanged greetings, and the mom asked the daughter, "You remember who that was? You know who that was?" And she goes, "Sure, that was the sermon." She wanted to hear the sermon. The daughter said, "Yeah, that's the sermon. And isn't that really the truth? Isn't that the core of it? We are the sermons, or we are supposed to be the sermons. People are listening. Children are listening, especially our children are listening to us at all times, not necessarily just the words. Again, being a guy that is more of a concrete type thinker, here's some other examples. I had a teacher in grade school, math teacher. She ended up being one of my favorites, but only because I was lazy and she let me get away with it. But Mrs. Smith was her name, Priscilla Smith. She arrived late for class 10 minutes every day. And it's not like she was just in the teacher's lounge smoking. They still allowed that back then. But the children, what the children learn was that they don't have to pay attention to anyone else's schedule or their needs at the time. And then when she did come, she let us be a little lazy. You know, the lesson that we learned was that being in charge, being the boss, being the leader, means you don't have to worry about anyone else's needs. You're in charge. You don't have to serve them. That's the wrong lesson. What about a pastor or elder or whatever, whoever, who does nothing but condemn everything, who preaches on hell every week and appears satisfied that half of the congregation is going to end up there? What example is that? A child quickly learns that there's no sense in going to church. There's half 50-50 chance I'm not going to make it anyway. Or what about the church member who complains every week that it's too hot or too cold or they don't like this or they don't like that or that's ridiculous? The children here, they learn that the only person in the room that is important is me. I'm number one. You need to worry about me. Or maybe the service is over and a group of friends gathers and begin to discuss something or another, something that another member said or did amongst their little group. The sermon, what's the sermon that we're preaching to that child who might be with us? They learn that it's okay to talk, that it's okay to talk behind someone else's back as long as you can get a few others to agree with you. Must be okay. And if it's true, if it really happened, it's not gossip. Now, I've come up with a solution, actually. We don't have to worry about that, is make sure there are no kids around when you talk, and then you don't have to worry about that. You won't be a bad influence on them. But obviously, that's not the answer. But what about people? You know, people and that treat others disrespectfully. They do it in a number of ways, whether by intimidation, or have a friend who I love dearly, but he interrupts all the time. You'll be talking about something, and he's so far ahead in his head, he's cut you off, and he starts talking. And it really irritates some people. And he's close enough, I can say, stop interrupting me, you know, but it's not respectful. I have another person I know very well who has to make sure that their opinion is known. That's not necessarily being respectful, because it's not always appropriate when they're doing this. Or criticizing others, or not forgiving, whatever. The list goes on and on. We can look at the other side of the coin a little bit. We can be sitting here and thinking, you know, I can think of a lot of people, a pile of famous people, sports stars, that you can think, I don't have any respect for that person. I have no time a day for that person. I have people, unfortunately, on that list. The guy in charge of Iran, Ahmadinejad, I don't respect him. That's not okay, I'm sure. Michael Vick, Tiger Woods, Paris Hilton. The list goes on and on. But they're in the spotlight. We see things they do. But have you ever asked yourself, obviously they have a lot of issues going on in their lives, but what if God called them? What if God called them and they were in that chair right there? Would I be okay with that? I'm not sure. I might struggle with that. And is that okay? And we really should take a close look at our attitudes towards others and towards ourselves. And if we do that, I think we're going to come up with a whole set of questions. Things like, is my attitude always respectful? Who do I respect? Who do I not respect? Do I treat everyone with the appropriate respect at all times? Do I consider anyone to be below me or unworthy of respect? Am I inwardly disrespectful while outwardly feigning respect? God knows my heart. Am I indifferent towards others? Either respectful or disrespectful, I just avoid them, then I don't have to deal with it. Is indifference a form of disrespect? I don't know. You know, these are just a few questions that I ask myself as I considered where I'm at in this area in my life. I'd also, again, ask you that no matter what your mind tells you as you ask those questions, your actions, your examples speak the loudest, especially to the children. And don't let yourself be fooled. God knows your heart, and He knows my heart. And He's going to hold us accountable for every action that we take. Turn back to 1 Thessalonians. If you would, please. First Thessalonians chapter 4. Start in verse 9. It says, now on the topic of brotherly love, you have no need for anyone to write you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. And indeed you are practicing it toward all the brothers and sisters in all of Macedonia. But we urge you, brothers and sisters, to do so more and more. Saying, you're doing it, you're getting it, but I want more. You need to do a better job of it. Verse 11, to aspire to lead a quiet life, to attend to your own business, and to work with your hands as we commanded you. In this way you will live a decent life before outsiders and not be in need. God tells us that we need to have a good reputation. He tells us, we read earlier, we need to have a good reputation amongst the outsiders, not just amongst our group here. We're told elsewhere we need to have a good reputation amongst decent people. You see, we are told that we need to be known not only for our beliefs, but for the way that we lived our lives. We're told we need to be a positive example so that when someone, say, maybe writes a eulogy for us someday, that they wouldn't have to work really hard to come up with something good to say about you. That it would come easy. In 1 Timothy, if you turn over there, 1 Timothy 3, I gave a sermon here a while back just on these verses, but I want to read them again because in this specifically it's talking about the qualifications of bishops and deacons, but as we've talked about before, it's not just for that because we are called to be part of God's kingdom of priests. And so this applies to every single one of us. Let's remind ourselves again. Starting in verse 1, this faith is a faithful saying. If a man desires the position of a bishop, he desires a good work. A bishop thus must then be blameless, the husband of one wife, temperate, sober-minded, of good behavior, hospitable, able to teach, not given to wine, not violent, not greedy for money, but gentle, not quarrelsome. But gentle, not quarrelsome, not covetous. One who rules his own house well, having his children in submission with all reverence. For if a man does not know how to rule his own house, how will he take care of the church of God? Not a novice, lest he being puffed up with pride, he fall into the same condemnation as the devil. Moreover, he must have a good testimony. Again, I mentioned this. Good reputation amongst those who are outside, lest he fall into reproach and the snare of the devil. And it goes on to say, likewise, deacons must be reverent, not double-tongued, not given to much wine, not greedy for money, holding the mystery of the faith with a pure conscience. First be tested, then let them serve as deacons, being found blameless. Likewise, their wives must be reverent, not slanderers, temperate, faithful in all sayings. And it goes on, and it goes on, and it goes on. But remember, it's talking about how we are to be. If we're serious about being a part of God's kingdom, this is how we are supposed to be. My second point here is to what or whom do I need to show respect? And we covered that a little bit already. Firstly, and most importantly, to God. Matthew 22, verses 34 through 39. We'll turn over there. Matthew 22. Matthew 22, we'll start in verse 34. Now when the Pharisees heard that he had silenced the Sadducees, they assembled together, and one of them, an expert in religious law, asked him a question to test him. We heard about this in the sermonette, some of the tests that Christ was given. It says, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" Jesus said to him, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and the greatest commandment." To love God is to honor him and respect him. See, God loves us, and He shows us His love by instructing us and guiding us and saying, this is how you do it. Do it this way, and things are going to be fine. It's going to be better than fine. And our relationship with God will be strong if we follow His instruction, and if we respect Him, and we show loyalty to Him. If we revere God in all ways, by doing that, we show our respect again to Him. Remember that we will be well blessed by having a proper and correct relationship with God. Do you remember, again, why He's called us? And what our futures are to be? Kings and priests. We're to be a part of His kingdom. And we need to be preparing for that now. Turn to the book of Psalm, chapter 19. And we're told in the third commandment that we're not to take God's name in vain, but as we talk about ways to respect Him, do we really know what that means? No, it's much more than just using one of the more popular cuss words that are out there. It means we're not to use God's name foolishly. We're to show respect for it. The book of Psalms, verse 19, starting in verse 12, it says, who can know all His errors? Please do not punish me for sins I am unaware of. And again, this David praying to God. Moreover, keep me from committing flagrant sins. Do not allow such sins to control me. Then I will be blameless and innocent of blatant rebellion. May my words and my thoughts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my sheltering rock and my redeemer. That's a prayer we should be asking of God ourselves. Because I'm unfortunately pretty sure my words and my thoughts probably aren't always acceptable to God. What about you? If yours aren't, what are you doing about it? How are you going to change it? And we could even consider how we keep God's Sabbath as a very clear way to show whether or not we have respect or disrespect for God. Could we fall into that trap of seeing the Sabbath as just another day? You know, okay, we won't go to work today, but you know, it's a real casual, informal approach to God's holy time. I have at times. How about you? You know, we see this trend towards casualness in our society. In attitudes and dress, a lot of places have casual Fridays where people don't have to follow the dress code anymore. I did away with casual Fridays because they were not appropriate. You know, not just wearing my old blue jeans. It was stuff that you shouldn't be allowed to wear in public. But what happens is we get sucked into that ourselves a little bit. We can succumb to that. That societal trend, if we're not careful. It's very important for us to think about the Sabbath day and how holy it is to God. And it's, we know that we're to come to Him with our best, to come to worship Him and do our best to try to emulate Him. Obviously, our spiritual approach to the Sabbath is most vital, but our physical approach to God's Sabbath can have a great effect on our attitude as well. It can affect the spiritual side if we're not careful. Another, we talked about first and foremost, we need to be respectful to God. We talked about also, we'll mention again, that we need to be respectful to our parents. It told us that. We didn't read the Ten Commandments, but it says that specifically in there. The Bible tells us specifically to honor our father and mother 8 times. Again, not just to, you should do it if you get a chance, or might do it if you think about it. We are to honor them. We're to honor our neighbors, our acquaintances, our co-workers, our fellow church members, the ministry. According to the Stanford Encyclopedia, it says, people can be the objects or recipients of different forms of respect. We can respect a person's legal rights. We can show respect for the president by calling him Mr. President. We can have a healthy respect for an easily angered or provoked person. Stay out of arm's length from them. We can respect someone by providing a lot of care for them. We can respect an individual for their commitment to a worthy cause or project. And we can accord a person the same basic moral respect that we think any person deserves. That idea of respect can be a little ambiguous. But respecting others can be hard at times. Our human nature can reason away why we have the right to treat someone with less than respect. You know, they don't deserve my respect. They haven't earned my respect. I've had a lot of people say that. I've heard that. I've probably said it myself. See, we need to be careful with that. Turn over to Matthew 7 and verse 1. And again, I understand this can be a touchy subject, but I count you all my friends, and if something that I'm working on, I want to share it with you as well. And let's think through this, because usually it's something that we all can think about and work on together. Matthew 7, verse 1, as we talk about whether we allow our respect to be bestowed upon someone else, Matthew 7, verse 1 says what? It says, do not judge so that you will not be judged. So if we deem that person is unworthy of our respect, is that not in a way judging them? Romans 14, 13. I'll read it to you. You can look it up later. Write it down, please. Romans 14, 13 says basically the same. Therefore, we must not pass judgment on one another, but rather determine never to place an obstacle or a trap before a brother or sister. What about church leaders? Do we always have the proper respect for these people that God has allowed to be in charge? It is expected of us. 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 12 and 13. We could turn there as we begin to wrap this up. 1 Thessalonians 5, verses 12 and 13. It says, now we ask you, brothers and sisters, to acknowledge those who labor among you and preside over you in the Lord and admonish you, and to esteem them most highly in love because of their work. Be at peace among yourselves. Are they going to make mistakes? Yes, they're men. They're not perfect. But God is perfect, and God is in charge, no matter what. And He puts people in position, and He allows things to happen. But when we get disgruntled with decisions or with people or whatever, we have to wonder, especially if it's in the church, we have to make sure that we're not questioning God's wisdom. You see, nothing happens that God does not allow. What about this? We read earlier, it said, If Christ said that the greatest commandments were to love God and love your neighbor, doesn't that mean that we should also love their property or their possessions? Sure it should. We know that. Again, we know that. If we respect the others, by respecting the other's property, we respect the owner. If you borrow something, you bring it back in the same condition or better than you borrowed it. Again, basic things. Things that we do that our children see us do, that we teach them. That others around us see how we behave and see how we act. By doing something as simple as showing respect for another person's property or rolling down your window, throwing your cheeseburger wrapper in somebody's lawn, that's not respecting their property. I understand, I'm getting a little, you know, picky on things, but understand, look at it from God's eyes. Let's look at 1 Corinthians 13, I should say. We understand that 1 Corinthians 13 is the love chapter. And we've all been encouraged many, many times to read this and to put our name in it, if you will, and see if it applies to us. Remember, if we look at starting in verse 4, love suffers long and is kind. We talked about putting, you've been told at times, put your name in there. Does it say Joe suffers long and is kind? Ooh. Joe does not envy? You could do that yourself again. Love does not parade itself. It is not puffed up. It does not behave rudely. It does not seek its own. It is not provoked. It thinks no evil. It does not rejoice in iniquity. Again, we can go on and on and on. God tells us, we know what it tells us. Verse 13, though, of Romans 13, it says, and now abide faith, hope, and love, these three. But the greatest of these is love. How are you doing in this area? I'm working on it. I still have work to do. How about you? Are you good enough? And if you think you are, does God think so? We need to make sure that we don't underestimate the power of our actions and our words to those around us. What we say and what we do and how we do and say those things is so very powerful. It can either lift a person up or it can tear them down. God tells us to watch that we are to build others up. Well, let's wrap up again here, but I want to give you a list of points, of thinking points, if you will, and ask you to consider these and to remember how to treat others, how we are to treat others. First one is that we need to realize that other church members, even people outside the church maybe, but specifically other church members, are fellow heirs to God's family. You know, even people who aren't being called will have their chance to repent and to be a part of God's kingdom. Everybody. Are you okay with that? Because we need to be. Number two, we need to keep confidences and confidential matters confidential. That means no gossip. And just because what you're saying might be true doesn't mean that you should, that doesn't make it not gossip. We need to avoid cliques. You know, people avoid little groups of people. And when they see you in your little group, people often wonder what you're talking about or what's going on. Remember, we need to avoid the appearance of evil. People start wondering, what are they whispering about over there? We need to avoid talking about others. Again, very easy to say, hard to do. We need to learn to listen effectively. Learn to listen to the other person. Really listen to what they're saying. Not to be rushing off on to get to get out what we want to say or off to the next person or to the next topic. We need to listen to both sides of an issue before drawing a conclusion. Again, not new things, but things that just reminders. Again, I'm a concrete person. I like concrete examples. We need to not ask anyone to do something that we wouldn't do ourselves. Again, being the example, walking the walk. We should get to church early and stay late. I like to get to church early and leave early, but I'm working on the staying late part. You know, again, set the tone, fellowship, and learn to love people. It's what God expects of us. We need to learn to love people. And that's something that we need to ask God to help us with. We need to develop a sincere warmth that will make people comfortable in approaching us. And the last one that I came up with for myself that I'll share with you also is I need to remember not to think so highly, or I could say in general, we need to not think so highly of ourselves that we are easily offended. Well, in conclusion, God has commanded us to love and to respect each other. And it's a concept that every single one of us, I believe, struggles with at times. And I wish that someone could discover that secret to help make it easier for each of us to overcome. We cannot do it, though, without God's help, and we need to remember that. Look into your own heart and determine, where are you at in your quest to overcome in this area of your life? Ask God to help develop the ability to love and to honor and to respect others at all times. Even those people who do bad things, remember, will have their chance to repent and be a part of God's kingdom. The lack of honor and respect is truly at epidemic proportions, but both you and I, with God's help, can bring about a change. We can start a trend. We need to speak with respect. We need to show respect every day. We need to live our lives so that those around us can learn from what they see, so that when we die, they'll have an easy time writing something nice about us. And finally, we must respect God above all else while not forgetting to respect our parents, our neighbors, our acquaintances, our landlord, our pastor, our employer. The list goes on and on. You get the picture. But I want to close with, again, the verse that we started with, 1 Peter 2. Verses 11 through 17, I'll read it. It says, "Dear friends, I urge you as foreigners and exiles to keep away from fleshly desires that do battle against the soul, and maintain good conduct amongst the non-Christians so that they now malign you as wrongdoers. They may see your good deeds and glorify God when he appears." Dropping down to verse 17, I'll leave you with this. "Honor all people. Love the family of believers, fear God, and honor the King."